Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. This is Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. Today is part two of my two-part interview with Gleb Sapolsky. Now, he is known as the disaster avoidance expert. And if you are in business, if you're running a nonprofit, if you have a ministry or a church, folks, you need to hear what he has to say. We all face those critical decisions. Often, they have to be made on the spur of a moment that affect our operations well into the future. And we sometimes go with our gut. And Gleb is here to show us that is not the method you want to use. Now, he has written a book called Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. He is a consultant. He's helped hundreds of companies all across the world. And he's here with us today. And we're jumping right back into this interview now with Gleb Sapolsky. The business world, a current concept taught is SWOT, where the leaders to figure out the strength and weaknesses of their own organization, evaluate the opportunity before them, then balance that off with the threats presented. Is that sort of the same thing, and does it work as well as what it's being promoted in the business world?
The SWOT, so the technique in the military works quite well. There are some challenges with it because of the nature of human decision-making that the military is currently trying to address through the cutting edge research that I'm talking about. They're trying to improve their methodology because their methodology has some weaknesses just because of how our brains are wired. For example, the normalcy bias that I mentioned before, that we don't imagine how major disasters can happen. And so those things are sometimes not considered nearly enough. And we tend to be too optimistic about how our plans will go. So this is some of the SWOT is quite a bit worse than the current military methodology, actually. I have to tell you, I actually had an article just published in Inc. magazine about how poor the SWOT actually is. It gives people who use it a false sense of comfort. You know, they think that they're doing something that that will help them prevent problems down the road, but often it actually causes more problems than it prevents. Wow. Why is that? Because business leaders, there are two. One of the, we talked about the cognitive biases, the typical judgment errors that business leader, that everyone tends to make. My book, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters, actually looks at the 30 most dangerous cognitive biases for leaders and how they can address them effectively. So two of the biggest ones for leaders, I already talked about normalcy bias, two of the biggest ones are optimism bias and overconfidence bias. Now, overconfidence bias causes leaders to be too confident about their abilities, causes them to be way too confident about their abilities. We know that, and it actually applies to all human beings, not simply leaders. In leaders, it's certainly, it just has a bigger impact on others. So we know that if people say that they're 100% confident about something, you know, they'll bet the farm, they'll bet their career, they'll bet the business, they're actually right about 80% of the time. Wow. So they think they're 100% confident. They're totally right. They're right about 80% of the time. That means that 20% of the time when you make that bet, you will lose that bet. Or, you know, if you have 10 people making the bet, two of them will lose that bet. So that's a pretty bad, bad situation where that's a lot of reasons why businesses are lost. You know, if you look at startups, you can see that startups, about half of them fail within the first 5 years. About two-thirds of them fail within the first decade. Partially because startups have less resources, so they make a lot more, you know, bet the startup decision, bet the company decisions, where the leaders are totally confident that they're right and they make really bad decisions. Okay. So that's kind of an example there. So overconfidence bias, we know, causes companies that have more overconfident leaders to perform worse. That's one. The other one is optimism bias. It's related, not quite the same thing. Overconfidence bias causes leaders to make decisions too quickly, have too few viable alternatives. Optimism bias causes them to underestimate risks and overestimate rewards. They tend to be too optimistic about the future, partially because they are too optimistic about themselves. They think, hey, I'm awesome, and therefore my plans must be awesome, and my company must be awesome, and nothing bad will happen. So that's kind of how the mental, you know, they wouldn't admit it, and they wouldn't necessarily acknowledge this is the way they think, but this is how it feels to their gut. This is how their gut reactions tend to react. So the optimism bias and overconfidence bias. Now, as it relates to SWOT, what happens is that leaders tend to list way too many strengths and way too many opportunities, not nearly enough weaknesses, not nearly enough threats. I've been in this business for over 20 years. When I look at people who do SWOT analysis, I come into a company and I tell them, hey, have you done strategic planning? And you know, much of the time, let's say something like, about 30% of the time, 40% of the time, they've done a SWOT analysis. So I take a look at it, and every case, they list way too many strengths and opportunities, not nearly enough weaknesses and threats. And that gives them a very bad outcome, because then they invest their resources based on their perceptions of what are the opportunities, what are the strengths, what are the weaknesses, what are the threats. And they don't leave nearly enough resources for contingencies. You've talked rightly, Bob, about the importance of addressing contingencies, addressing threats. They don't do that nearly enough. And so when threats come about, companies tend to get ruined. Actually, the worst time for companies is when they're growing, because they tend to overinvest in growth. They tend to not leave enough resources for problems that will eventually accompany growth. So that's often a problem for growing companies, especially when they do a SWOT analysis, they go in the wrong direction. So that's something that you need to be very careful about doing SWOT analysis. You can do the SWOT analysis, but you need to strongly compensate for the inherent overconfidence and inherent optimism that's a part of being every leader.
Amen. Yeah, that's amazing that the technique being taught in business schools doesn't. Yeah,
it's pretty sad. I mean, it's sad. Amazing, but it's sad. It's a tragedy actually that I've seen so many people use it badly, and it really hurts.
You know, I remember reading somewhere that Thomas Edison, the inventor of the electric light bulb, failed something like 20,000 times. And somebody asked him if he ever thought of giving up after so many failures. And his response was, failure? I never failed one time. I discovered 20,000 different ways it didn't work. Yes. In other words, he's saying, I won't repeat the same mistake.
Yeah.
Now, there are CEOs out there, you know, when we think of their names, you know, you mentioned their names as brilliant business minds of today, you know, like Jeff Bezos, and Zuckerberg, or Jack Welch, et cetera, who has been said that, you know, they went with their gut and their intuition on these things. Are those rumors true, or are they just myths used in promoting their business prowess?
They're really myths. They're not true that they succeeded because they went with their gut. Now, your gut reactions, the only time they can be helpful are when you're in a situation that resembles the savanna environment. So, for example, if you've been working with somebody for a long time, and then you sense something with you're uncomfortable about, something that they're saying, something that is going on in the situation, that's a time to be worried about it, because, hey, that's kind of like what's happening in the savannah, you know? Maybe they're your tribal member, and maybe they're trying to steer you in the wrong direction to try to climb in the social hierarchy of the tribe. So that's kind of a tribal situation that where your gut is likely to steer you in the right direction. But in the large majority of cases, your gut is not going to steer you in the right direction. What happens with these leaders, people like Bezos, people like Gates, people like Zuckerberg, is that they have learned healthy mental habits over time. Like you, Bob, you've said that, hey, you know, what I did in the military is a gut reaction, but it's actually not. It's something you've learned. It's a specific technique you've learned to do over time. Now, think about these leaders. Think about, all the listeners who are business leaders. You've learned how to effectively delegate tasks to subordinates. Right. It feels like a gut reaction. It feels like, hey, this is something I'm very comfortable with, but it's not a gut reaction. It's a healthy learned mental habit. And it just happens to be the case that without that healthy mental habit, you would not be a leader. you've succeeded in developing that mental habit because you became a leader, or it allowed you to become a leader. You wouldn't be a leader if you didn't. Now think about, you know, pretty much everyone out there who is able to successfully differentiate spam very quickly from actual good emails. You've had to learn how to do that. It's not an intuitive thing. And it feels now intuitive now that you go through it. But, you know, you get your grandma out there and start have her start using email, and she will not be able to differentiate spam from quality emails.
Right.
So that's kind of like another example where we have, it feels very comfortable. It feels intuitive, but it's not. So what you want to check and see that what you're doing is if this is an area where you made a lot of right decisions in the past, let's say differentiating spam from good emails, or being able to delegate tasks effectively, or being able to, let's say, organize and plan your day. Many people are able to do that very automatically and quickly because they've learned how to do that. Those are areas where you can trust your behaviors, where you can trust your internal feelings, because those are not gut reactions, those are healthy mental habits. Problem is that we can't differentiate internally, intuitively, how the healthy mental habits feel from gut reactions. They just both feel like we're doing what's comfortable for us. This is the danger zone. When we're doing something that's comfortable, we need to question it. Because often when whatever is comfortable for us is actually the wrong thing to do. It's often the bad thing to do. The comfortable thing, we need to expand our comfort zones, especially when we're engaging in new tasks and different tasks that we didn't engage in before. And this is actually where the leaders tend to most often fail, when they're engaging in new tasks that they didn't engage in before. This is the big, big danger zone when you're engaging in new tasks, because leaders bring that sense of overconfidence and optimism with them from tasks they successfully do, like delegating tasks to others or something like that. Then they bring that to new tasks where they're not nearly as effective. They need to develop a much stronger sense of humility and a much stronger sense of getting an external perspective from other people who have done this task before, who have done this area before. This is actually why so many mergers and acquisitions fail. If you look at mergers and acquisitions, which is a pretty new task for many leaders that they don't engage in often, about 80% of mergers and acquisitions fail. They fail to create value. And this is such an important activity for a company. You know, it can be fundamentally important when you do a merger or acquisition, when you're being acquired. Right now, the merger between a potential merger between HP and Xerox is in the news, and Xerox is trying to acquire HP. And actually, I have a high-level contact within a Xerox, who are a client of mine, who says that, you know, the atmosphere there is pretty nutty right now because of this situation. They don't know what's going on. And the leadership at Xerox, this is a huge, huge, huge company. This is a huge decision for both companies. And of course, the leadership doesn't have experience with it. They're very likely to make bad decisions as a result of it. They're very likely to fail.
Wow. And that's one thing that the shareholders don't want to have happen is failure.
Yes, failure, and it's very likely to create failure. Now, right now, if I was in the shareholder of Xerox or HP, I would want to sell shares. And if I was an active stock trader, I would want to short those companies.
Wow, yeah. You know, I'm still a little blown away by all this. You know, in your book, you mentioned there's over 100 different cognitive biases. Is there a way we as individuals can learn more about the cognitive biases that we have so we don't fall into the trap of making those dangerous decisions?
Sure. So the easiest thing is to take an assessment. And my book, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Leaders and Avoid Business Disasters, has an assessment in the back of the 30 most dangerous cognitive biases for leaders in professional situations, or for professionals, any professionals. So what that does is it tells you the kind of behaviors that are associated with that cognitive bias and asks how often they happened in the last year in your professional context. I talked about optimism, I talked about overconfidence, normalcy bias. Those are all described there, but they're not described there, you know, do you suffer from the normalcy bias? People don't know that, and that's not intuitive. They're described in a much more intuitive way, where it's kind of specific behaviors that you can observe. For example, one of the big biases that really really harms leaders is called the planning fallacy, where we talked a little bit about planning already. Now, what leaders tend to do, unfortunately, they don't tend to plan for contingencies. They tend to make their plans and they think that, hey, everything will go according to plan. I made my strategic plan. I will invest resources in accordance with the strategic plan, that with the vision that everything will go according to the plan, even though very often it does not. So what leaders tend to fall, the trap that they fall into is they don't leave nearly enough resources for various scenarios that don't fit their vision that they see of the future. And that's called the planning fallacy, where we tend to be greatly too optimistic about our plans going correct, and we don't leave enough resources for problems of time, money, social capital, and whatnot. So that question on the planning fallacy asks, how many projects in your workplace over the last year have run over time or over budget? So again, over time or over budget, what is the percentage of them? So how many percent, you know, if you did 100 projects, let's say 30 of them ran over time or over budget, and so you would put 30. So 30% is your error rate of the planning fallacy. And there's 29 more questions like this that help you see which cognitive biases you're most prone to. Now, I'm not immune to these at all. The biggest problem for me is actually the optimism bias. I tend to be risk blind. I tend to think that things will go well. You know, the grass is green on the other side of the hill. The glasses half full. And that is a problem for me that I had to understand within myself that, hey, this is something I'm really vulnerable to, and train myself to address. And the best way to address this is to get an external perspective from somebody who is more pessimistic, who has the opposite perspective. They think the grass is yellow on the other side of the hill. So getting that external perspective from somebody who is more pessimistic is a very helpful way of addressing the planning, the optimism bias. So that's the way that each of the aspects of the assessment talks about. Here is the problem. Here's how vulnerable you are to it. And here are the specific steps that you can take to address your broader vulnerabilities to this problem. And of course, I also describe some techniques that you can use to address all of the cognitive biases and more broadly, that decision-making techniques that you can easily use to address a set of cognitive biases at once, as opposed to just addressing them one by one.
Amen. Does that go into, in your book, you discussed your 8-step decision-making model. Is that what you're talking about? Can you explain?
Yes. Sure. Happy to do so. So the 8-step decision-making model is for the serious issues, for what Bob discussed, when you have the time to evaluate the battlefield and you need to, you're not doing this very quickly. You're not doing this, in the heat of the moment. You're doing this when you're launching a major project, when you're making a major decision, when you're thinking about the future of the company. First step, identify the need for decision to be made. Again, identify the need for decision to be made. Kodak is a great historical example for this. They actually invented the digital camera in 1984. So Kodak invented it, but they chose to put it on the shelf and invest in film instead because it was more profitable. Eventually, they were overcome by a number of other companies that invested into the digital camera, and then Kodak went bankrupt pretty soon in the early 2000s because they chose not to make the decision to invest into the digital camera. So that's the first step. Identify the need for a decision to be made. Then gather relevant information from a variety of people who are informed perspectives on the issue at hand. So talk to people, especially people who have different opinions than you, different perspectives on the issue, information that you don't have. It's especially important because otherwise the intuitive natural overconfidence and optimism that we all suffer from will cause us to choose the option that we like as opposed to the option that is the best option. So that's why you need to have a lot of information from people, especially people who don't share your perspective. Okay. Then you want to decide on the goals. So have a clear decision-making process. You need to decide what goals you want to reach. What's the vision? What's your vision of the ideal outcome? So that you can clearly head toward that. Next, develop clear decision-making criteria to evaluate options. Now, if you want to, let's say, move your headquarters, or if you want to move your house, move to another city, what are the criteria that you're looking for? Are you looking for the cost of living to be lower? Are you looking for a nice cultural environment for yourself, your employees, You know, what are you looking for in that new place that you're going toward? And so develop the decision-making criteria. Next, generate viable options that can achieve your goals. This is incredibly important. Leaders, by and large, generate way too few options, to meet the criteria. They just choose the first available option that seems to make sense. Whereas if they took a little bit more time and generated more options, then they would be much more successful going forward. And we can see that in the business world when CEOs last for a few months, for less than a year. That's an example where the board didn't generate nearly enough viable options in hiring the CEO.
Wow.
Next. Yeah.
Is it true that a lot of poor outcomes come basically from not the decision or the plan of action itself, but just from how the plan is implemented, the actual implementation of the plan?
Well, yes. So we'll get to the implementation of the plan. I just want to make sure that we get through the steps. So you want to weigh these options, pick the best of the bunch, then implement the option. Next, and here we come to the last one, evaluate the implementation process and revise as needed. This is a critical step. You want to make sure to evaluate what you're doing, measure it, have some kind of way of measuring that you're successful, and revise it as needed. We tend to become way too attached to our plans, and we don't revise them as needed. There's a very famous cognitive bias called the sunken cost fallacy, where once we invest sufficient resources into a decision, into a plan, we are very reluctant to change our mind and say, hey, the decision was a bad one, the plan was a bad one, we need to change things, because our egos get associated with it. We feel bad. We feel that we are losers. We feel that we are at fault, that we're failures if we change the plan, if we revise the decision. And that's, again, what happens so often. This is what happened with Boeing, when Boeing didn't want to revise the plan for the 737 MAX launch after the first crash. This was a terrible, terrible decision. Looking back at it, it caused over 100 lives to be lost. It caused them many more billions of dollars than they would have suffered if they grounded the 737 MAX pretty quickly after the first disaster. They would have not lost so much trust. But Boeing's leadership, this huge company, made a really terrible decision to not revise the implementation process because they felt that they would be seen as failures and losers if they didn't. So this is something that you want to make sure that you do. Revise the implementation process, evaluate it, and revise it as needed.
Yeah, amen. And then we just briefly mentioned, because that came to my forethought, about the implementation of the plan. It's not the decision itself, but how you actually implement the plan. And that kind of ties in with, hey, this isn't a bad plan. Let's go ahead and scrap it and revise what we're doing. But how can we not fall into that trap, I guess?
Not fall into the trap of implementing it poorly? I want to make sure you understand what you're asking.
Okay. I love, imagine if the plan failed. I often look at it like, what's the worst possible outcome if we do this? And would I be okay with that outcome? Followed by, if this starts to happen, am I going to be able to adjust this on the fly to achieve a more positive outcome? I mean, again, I relate it to my military training, but training actually narrows the perspective down to the business folks. And that's what I'm saying about implementing the plan, the actions that take place when you do that and things aren't working right.
Yes. So what you want to do as a business leader or a solopreneur or a professional, when you're looking at your career or anything like that, you want to be prepared. You want to not fall into the normalcy bias. We all tend to do that, and it's very easy to do that. We all tend to think that things will go normal, that things will go according to plan, and we don't tend to plan enough for major disasters or even kind of moderate disasters. So you want to be able to be ready and be humble. This is critical for you. In order to change your mind, change your perspective, you need to develop the quality of humility. Be humble about your decision-making. Be humble about your planning. Say that, hey, yeah, I know I'm going to launch this plan, I'm going to implement it, but I will not be arrogant. I will say that, hey, you know, things might happen, there might be problems. Ideally, you do like Bob said and plan for them in advance. There is a technique that I teach my clients called the pre-mortem and the pre-parade. And the whole technique is called failure-proofing. So the first thing you do is you imagine the plan completely failed. Completely failed. So that's the first step. Imagine that it completely failed. Then think about all the reasons why it might have failed. All the reasons. And then think about how you can address these reasons in advance, if possible. You know, you can build the solutions into the plan itself. Let's say if a key employee left, something that you could have done in advance is you could have trained up somebody else to be the backup for this key employee. So that's something you can do for everyone, for including for yourself. You know, anyone can be hit by a bus at any time, right? If you're so you want to be able to have a replacement available for any key employee. So that's an example that you can solve the problem in advance. Or you can develop a plan, a contingency plan for what happens if the situation occurs. Let's say your product launch goes much more poorly than you envision. So you want to have a plan to address, to know, you know, if your product doesn't hit 4.5 million within the first 6 months, that is an indication, clear indication that it's going worse than you wanted and you need to shift your plan. So you want to have a contingency plan in place of what you're going to do if the product is going much worse than you anticipated. So that's the first step. That's the to prevent failure. Then to maximize success, what you want to do is imagine that your plan worked out much better than you anticipated. Think about all the reasons why it worked out much better than you anticipated. For example, let's say you're trying to hire new employees, and something that might happen that you might anticipate is that another company in your space, that it's a competitor, has gone bankrupt and you have a number of their employees available to hire. Mm-hmm. Or what's happening right now in Xerox and HP, hint, hint, tech companies, is that there are many folks who are trying to leave Xerox and HP because of the instability. So maybe they're going for a merger, then a lot of people are scared about what's the likelihood, which I know is actually happening from my contacts with Xerox. Mm-hmm. So what you'll want to do in that case is you want to reserve some money not spend all your money on the initial hires, but reserve some money and some spaces in your company for future potential hires. And so that's another way that you can ensure success by envisioning this scenario. And then again, problem solve, address, implement the success into your plan by reserving some money or whatnot. And so that's the way that you minimize failure and maximize success on any launch. So you imagine how it might fail, address that in advance. Imagine how it might succeed, address that in advance.
Hey, man. Gleb, this is all so fascinating. I truly appreciate you taking the time to come on the program today and explain this in simple language for us, because I believe what you shared today is going to help a lot of people. I really do. And if someone wanted to get in touch with you to ask a question, invite you to come speak or at a conference or whatever, get information about your training, or maybe do an interview like this, how can they do that? How can they get in touch with you?
Well, they can, of course, check out my book, Never Go With Your Gut, How Pioneering Leaders Make the Best Decisions and Avoid Business Disasters. It's bookstores everywhere, online and in person. In order to get in touch with me personally, check out the services of my company, blog, audio casts, video casts, and resources. Go to disaster avoidance experts.com. Again, disaster avoidance experts.com. That's my company. If you want to get in touch with me personally, please connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. That's Gleb Tsipursky on LinkedIn, Dr. Gleb Tsipursky, GLEBTSIPURSKY. You can follow me on Twitter, Gleb_Tsipursky, and just shoot me an email if you have any questions about anything I discussed today at Gleb@disaster avoidance experts.com. Again, Gleb@disaster avoidance experts.com.
I appreciate that. I'll put up links to all that down in the show notes. Folks, all I can say is wow. I mean, the information Gleb Tsipursky has provided us today can change your life, even if you're not the CEO of a major Dow Industrials company. Amen. This information can help you as a mom and pop business owner, as a church leader, a ministry trying to grow. The processes are all the same. It just involves larger decision ramifications. But the processes are the same, and the impact of the results are proportionately the same as well. You need to get a copy of Gleb's book, Never Go With Your Gut. This book is awesome. I've read it. It's full of information. It will transform how you think and make decisions. The assessment at the end is great. Daily decisions that need to be made, you'll get better at it as well. Use the links down below to get your copy of the book or get in touch with Gleb. And Gleb, again, thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to join us today. I do appreciate it, man.
Thank you so much for having me on, Bob. It's been a pleasure to discuss it with you.
Amen. Now, folks, that's all the time we have for today. So for Gleb Sikorski and myself, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this. Your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts, share your unique insights, and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.